So 2025 starting, you're like, what's got you excited right now, dude?
Dude, I'll tell you what it is. Like, it's just like the reflection. Like, you know, if you've been banging your head against this wall with Bitcoin for ages and you're like, you know, you used to think about, oh, imagine when like a bank starts talking about it or starts accepting it. Because there's sort of these tiers, right? There's like humans or individuals, and the people catch on quicker, you know, and then eventually it graduates up the hierarchy to corporations. And Saylor's obviously pushed heaps of that, which he's done. He's the best salesman you could ask for. Like, you know, and people got insulted that I was like, oh, Michael Saylor's a salesman. And they were like, oh, how dare you say that? I'm like, dude, what are you talking? It's the biggest compliment ever. He's the best salesman we've got. Well, fucking mate, he's number one in the country, number one in the world for shilling Bitcoin to people, right? In that corporate level. He's the corporate ambassador, let's say. And then, you know, you're going to have the sovereign teams. The next one graduating above that is the governments. And it's all very real. Like, you got to remember, and I say this to people, it's like World War III isn't the problem. It's World War D, debt. Every person has the same enemy. Every single one of you guys. No one is excluded from it. I don't care if you're Puerto Rico, you're Russia, you're China, anyone. You all got the same enemy. And so it's sort of like, well, how do we imagine if Bitcoin is the sword that we all use to slay the same enemy, right? This debt monster. And I reckon that's the way it's going to go. And the conversation's actually quite, you know, tangible now. It's not just like oh, imagine if that. It's like, no, dude, like they're speaking, they're trying to win votes, they're trying to understand this technology. Man, I tell you what, we've been kissed on the ass by a fairy, to say the least. Like, just blessed, you know, it feels like we have been anyway. Well, look, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but it's in the right direction. It's positive, let's say. The conversation's positive. So that's really exciting, I think. And, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, look at the markets. They've gone spastic since he came in, since he got voted in. It was almost like, it was kind of like, I read the best example. Everyone was like, you know, oh, this sigh of relief almost after the election, because a lot of people were waiting on to see what happens in the election. And everyone, someone says, like, it's like everyone, the whole world was waiting for STD results. Like, oh, shit, do I have an STD or not?
Great analogy. Oh my God.
I thought that was so accurate. I mean, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's
No,
like
but
tense, but in like a
literally, it's like
negative
this,
direction. Like
like,
there's no good outcome, but like we could have a really bad outcome.
yeah, kind of thing. And so it's sort of like, you know, I think everyone, and like obviously the markets have responded to that by just cranking. Like Bitcoin's gone from 68K to 105 and, you know, back to 95 and stuff. But these are all Looney Tunes numbers. Like, it's just ridiculous. You know, you'd back in the day, you'd think about this and be like, oh, imagine that. And, you know, people got called wild for thinking it'll get to 10,000, and then $1 million was the big wild card. But now, I mean, I don't think you could ask a person that's been in the space for probably 4 or 5 years if $1 million doesn't feel very, that almost doesn't feel like ambitious enough to say it. It's sort of like, it's almost entered the psyche of all of us where it's like, oh, it probably hits that. Unless there's like, you know, something catastrophic happens, but the trend is our friend almost, you know? So it feels like that's the direction it's going to go. But I mean, it's just all so exciting. And then you look at like, here's what I reckon is really cool, right? So think about how good we've done with information. So human beings, we've just gone through the age of information. We've figured out how to take a machine the size of a bedroom. Let's call that the first 1 megabyte storage facility that IBM made or whatever. And it was like the size of, you know, a house or whatever. And we figured out how to put, you know, 100 million of those or 1 billion of those, whatever a terabyte is in relation to 1,000 or 1 million, onto something the size of my fingernail, which has got a cut on it, but, you know, like something tiny. So that compression shows our, like, what the path of age of information did. You know, it's next, the next granddaddy off the thing, the age of energy. Dude. The same thing we figured out with basically how to compress information, we're going to do the exact same thing with energy. So it's not going to be like this, oh, big giant power plants and shit. Nah. It's going to be like the size of your microwave powering your whole apartment building sort of thing. And I reckon, like, you know, we're on the cusp of that. And people go, oh, well, we don't have the technology. We'll figure it out if we haven't already, which I'm very confident we already have. But let's imagine we
Same.
have.
Very confident.
Yeah, very confident. Let's imagine hypothetically we haven't. Well, we're about to enter an arms race for energy. So if it hasn't happened yet, it's coming, because every single resource on the planet is going to try and figure out how to optimize their energy. If the biggest enemy they've got in the world is debt. And they're trying to figure out that Bitcoin's this master sword, like in Zelda. You know, it's a master sword. It doesn't break. Well, okay, that's pretty good. Let's use that. So now how do we treat Bitcoin as good as possible? Because remember, Bitcoin's every country's best friend now for national security purposes. So they're going to say, well, we need the best energy systems. And so this is going to point the guns at energy optimization. So just before we had so much at stake in information, we had to pour resources into it. And we went from, you know, a 1 megabyte bedroom to an LLM on a thumb drive. Like that is the whole internet of every information we've ever had squished into it. Like the compression is wild. And so energy will probably take the same path because now every country wants to figure out how to mine Bitcoin cheaper, freer, and more regeneratively than any other country. And so this is going to cause this real, we benefit heaps. I mean, maybe not me personally because I won't be old enough. I'll be too young or old or whatever, but it's all coming. And I think that is so exciting. Let's look at times in history where we've been forced to figure it out. Atom bomb, perfect example. Diamonds, pressure. Lump of coal, put it under pressure, makes a diamond. Put human beings under pressure, world war, everyone's dying, da-da-da, fuck, we've got to figure it out. Okay, we figured out how to basically, you know, unleash the strong nuclear force or whatever it is, you know? And so when we have pressure, typically humans deliver. Actually, it's probably the time where we deliver the most. The most innovation happens when there's a lot of pressure on to innovate. And it's sort of like, is it because we're under the pump where we've got to figure it out? Or is it because it finally gets all the resources and attention that it deserves? Like you send $100 billion to Ukraine, that's something. You give $100 billion to some energy scientists, dude, you ain't working ever again in your entire life. Nobody you know, no planet you know is ever doing it again because they're all solvable problems, but they just need resources and attention. And so fighting for attention in this world, which is just, hey, you know, grab this, grab the chips, grab the Coca-Cola, grab this. All of that is just net negative on your soul, your brain, your everything. And it's not contributing to humanity. But if I'm like, you know, if we really start figuring out and everyone starts going, you know, shit, we need energy. We need it better than the next guy. Then it starts becoming a conversation. And once people starts like natural resources start becoming, you know, a curious subject where it's like, well, we need to work with these countries and those countries because we don't have enough. Like germanium and gallium have been cut off from importing in America from China. They stopped doing that. And those are like the active ingredients, silicon fabrication or whatever, military communication stuff. So like these precious metals, dude, they mean something to a lot of people. And so like you look at Trump and they're talking about Greenland now. Greenland's really natural. I'm pretty sure they've got heaps of resources. And they'd be like, you know, Trump's sort of looking at someone else's plate at the dinner table. Like, are you still going with that? You know, like, you know, when your mate's got like a steak and chips and he doesn't eat all the chips, you're like, Can I scab a chip? Do you mind? That's literally, he's like, can I scab a part of your country, Denmark? It's like, dude, I woke up yesterday morning. I don't know what fucking day of the week it is. It's this weird New Year's and Christmas period. And I read that Trump's buying Denmark and that Donald Trump Jr., I think, is it Trump Jr.? Yeah, he's flown to Denmark. I'm like, what the fuck? And then I'm like, oh, and also this morning, it's not the Gulf of Mexico anymore. It's the Gulf of America. Oh, and Canada might become 50%. I'm like, man, my dude's on Amazon on a shopping spree right now. Like,
he got too many gift cards in the stocking.
He's got so many countries and shit in his cart. I was like, all right, dude. Have at it. But, you know, and now we look at like, okay, well, what's going to make energy important? Well, the golden goose is. So Bitcoin's going to make it important for national security because if the reason why my dollar is being used is because of this golden goose, I'm now dependent on that. Like a, you know, like a heroin addict, like a alcoholic, whatever it is, I function only with my dependency. And so that's going to happen. They're going to be like, well, we've got to protect it at all costs. Like, you know what I mean? And that's so, it's like the Bitcoin is every country's Fort Knox, basically. And they're going to have their own Fort Knoxes to protect their access to Fort Knox. And I think that whole conversation becomes everything energy related. You know, if you've got the best energy in town or the most efficient or the most cost effective, you get all the AI data centers, you get all that, you get all the infrastructure. And remember, when Bitcoin miners come to town, they're sort of like a sniffer dog. But instead of sniffing for drugs, they're sniffing for bargains of energy. So that under there. It's like, okay, cool. We'll put a mining rig here and vent gases come out of the earth and we'll make money out of nothing. that whole thing, I reckon, is going to become a massive thing. So, like, in Australia, for example, we've got heaps of natural resources. And it's like, let's say you wanted an ultra-efficient energy system in your economy. Great. Who do I find? Let's find the tight asses in energy. Who are they? Bitcoin miners. They've got the most competitive industry in the world. Like, I don't think there is a single more competitive space to be in. So if I wanted to find all the good resources in my country, I'd probably talk to them because they're the guys that are always looking for the most sustainable bargain possible. And so they're basically like sniffer dogs finding regenerative sources of, you know, energy. So what you should do if you're a country, like incentivize, let's say, you know, these micro margins in Bitcoin mining, right? Let's say I'm the Prime Minister of Australia. I would say every single Bitcoin miner in Australia, if you mine Bitcoins in Australia, we'll pay you 1% above spot price. So we'll be a buyer of first resource. So now there's a 1% increase in their margin, which is astronomical to a Bitcoin miner because that margin is such micro margins. So you do that. Now the country has a way to stack continuously. So they're getting a constant feed because they're always going to be sold to the country because the country's paying overs. The country doesn't mind because in the process of accumulating their stack, they're developing and finding their whole energy grid's infrastructure that can give it the longest standing, you know, optimizations and efficiencies. And so I think that's sort of like a win-win trade. Hey, we'll pay you over. We come and find all the energy in our country. Oh, what's in it for us? Well, you mine Bitcoins and we'll pay you 1% more than any other country would. And I reckon that's going to be a thing. I reckon countries are going to say, get in here, guys, figure it out for us. We'll pay you overs. And I think that's probably going to happen because the hyper-competitiveness is going to go only up. Like, it's only going to get more competitive. And so now when governments are involved with it, they're going to want Bitcoin miners coming to them. So, that, you know, these Bitcoins are American-made or whatever you want to say, like that whole premise, I think that's going to be a thing. And plus, if you've got domestic mining or onshore mining, you now have a supply chain to directly access these coins if you wanted to pay overs. Great example is, people never talk about this enough, but it's like, Iran, their central bank. So they go, no, Bitcoin exchanges or whatever, you can't, that's not allowed. Okay, if you're a miner, all good, but you have to sell it to us. You have to. We have to be the buyer, basically. So the miners are like, well, if they're selling, they can only sell it to the central bank. So as the central bank's looking at it, they're getting, so, and at the time, Iran had about 5 or 6% of the hash rate. And so at this time, the central bank is basically buying 5.5 to 6% of whatever the network's producing every day. That's a pretty good DCA strategy if you're a country, right? And so I think there's going to kind of be that whole mantra. Now, some countries are just going to hold a gun to people's heads and take their coins, maybe. But I think that's the most elegant, long-standing approach. If a central bank does have a purpose, it should be to create liquidity for the raw materials or the raw energy that's converted into something worth something, basically. That feels like a pretty good place for them. Everything else, don't need you to talk about monetary policy, guys. We're fine. Like, we've got 21 million. It's got a clock on it. Like, we're all good. But yeah, we'd like you to be the buyer, and you should be connecting your Federal Reserve or your reserve bank to this network and do that through the miners. So I think, you know, that's a lot of words, Sue, but that's all the exciting shit we got to look forward to, you know? Like, that's all, it's going to happen. And then you're going to have countries fighting to acquire their strategic reserves. And then the countries that miss out on acquiring their strategic reserves, if they don't get in early enough or they don't buy enough, or, you know, the price, let's say one big country like America buys heaps and the price blows out to 500,000 a coin. Now, you know, Fiji or someone, they can't get on this standard as much. But what will happen is if they're trying to buy it to sort of pay off debt or pay down some of their government debt, some of these smaller countries might have to wait until Bitcoin becomes a bigger number. So what they might do is they might buy some coins today and they go, look, we can't buy anymore. And the price has gone from 200,000 to a million, you know, the next couple of years, whatever. We're priced out almost, right? And so we've got to accumulate a slow-mo, but we missed the boat. So I think those guys, what they'll do, they'll time lock the coins to a future date with the government custody key that's meant to be holding this strategic reserves. So they could time lock this coin and say, look, we're time locking. Look, one Bitcoin's worth, you know, let's say one Bitcoin's worth $100,000, but we think it's going to be worth $100 million in 20 years. We've time locked 10 Bitcoins for 20 years from now. Here's the public key. This is the government's key. This is how we sign it, you know. And in 20 years' time, we'll be able to pay down debt with whatever this is. And so they'll be kind of prepaying their debts into the future in a way where they've got these provable, basically this provable receipt that they're going to pay in advance. But that's the way that countries that can't accumulate enough today to offset their actual balances, they might accumulate today and pay it for tomorrow, but you know, many years in the future. But I would see younger, smaller countries doing that as a hack to kind of get ahead, where they can say, well, look, we're not, the whole world's not on a Bitcoin standard yet anyway. So we've bought these coins. We agree that they're going to be worth a lot. We're time locking these for the next 6 administrations to unlock in 6 administrations time, or 10 or 20, whatever it is. Same way, a great example, Benjamin Franklin or George Washington. I think it was Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was some dude, one of these famous cats. Yeah, Benjamin Franklin. Philadelphia and Boston, I think when he died, he left money to them and he goes, nah, there's a kicker. You can't touch it for 200 years. They're like, what the fuck do you mean? He goes, no, dudes, trust me, compound interest. This thing's mad. And they're like, bullshit, we need the money. He's like, no, trust me. So he time locks it basically for 200 years. So Boston and Philadelphia can't access it. They were permitted to access half of it after 100 years. And it went from, you know, I don't know, $5,000 to a couple of million or something like that. And it was to demonstrate the power of long-term thinking and compound interest. And I think that same strategy might come into play because they paid $5,000 at the time for something that was, you know, translated into $8 or $10 million or something. Now, I know it's a loose example, but that same premise of level of foresight, like, we're not talking about the Super Bowl. We're not talking about, oh, the next season on Netflix, we've got to plan accordingly. Or, you know, we're not a movie studio. This is Earth. Like, the end. Finish the game. This is the last bastion. Everyone working together to figure out, to get around this asset that's sort of like this genie in a bottle, which is fixing everyone's problems. Hey, I know you guys have got debt. I can fix it. And, you know, that's kind of, that's just, I don't know how to get more excited about shit like that. Like, holy fuck, what's in store for us, you know? Mix that in with AI and all the energy demands. We're going to have Bitcoin be this, like, sentient creature, basically. Like, this network that sees all, knows all, and records all. And I also think that that's interesting because it's like a ledger of time. And it is like an energy commitment ledger. So it's almost like, it's kind of like screenshots for the energy of Earth in each block. So all the mining energy that poured in, we can find the nodes that relayed the thing and sort of almost reconstruct what the energy grid looked like and where all the energy was pouring into the network from in a weird way, but sort of like every time a block is mined or one, let's say, that's like a screenshot in time, like a four-dimensional screenshot where it snapshots. Here's everyone's balances. Here's all the energy that went into it. Here's the miners that were on the network. Here's how many nodes that were on the network. And I think of that. Now, today, we can't do much with that. That's just words on a screen and stuff. But recording all this today, there's going to be future versions of us which can recreate or reconstruct a lot of moments, let's call them, in time from all the data that they've got. So think about all the data in the world that we have right now. Facebook knows that there's a Wi-Fi signal bouncing between my face and this. It's probably drawing my room right now. And all that data is somewhere. Now, to the future civilizations, let's say us in 50 or 60 years, that data is most likely going to be open and available to people. Like it would have, you know, it's not going to stay locked up forever. Like there's going to be some point in the future where the data becomes compromised and everyone sort of has this big open data set. And if that's the case, then they can probably figure out how to reconstruct all the different little energy signatures that went into this block to basically reproduce moments in time, almost like getting a four-dimensional snapshot of what time was like when this block was mined. And I know it sounds a bit wonky, but like if Bitcoin doesn't break, this thing's going to be around for another 100 years, let's say. If it's around for another 100 years, the people watching it and observing it are going to be wildly intelligent or knowledgeable, let's say, because of the amount of information. Like before the internet, people used to not know something and they lived their whole life not knowing what a Polish accent sounds like. Oh, I wonder what a person from Poland sounds like. Oh, I wonder what a person from Germany sounds like. I don't know because I have no rich media to discover it from. And now everyone knows everything. And if they don't, they can get you the answer in probably 30 seconds. That is a wild paradigm shift. Now, what's the next paradigm shift look like? Well, I think it's probably like if we went back in time and said we spoke to someone about something, they're like, I don't know anything about that. I think there's a friend down in the other community down the road, in the village down the road. He might know something about, you know, eating meat or cooking a steak, but I don't know about it. I haven't learned it. And the only way you'd learn is from your community because you couldn't communicate outside. So if we think about the evolution of knowledge and how much it's been compressed into here, the same track will happen, I think, with the evolution of energy. So information's taken this way to get every single piece of information that every brain has ever had, and we can fit it into the palm of our hand in 30 seconds accessible. That's wild. I think energy probably takes the same conversation. Information used to be very valuable and very expensive because it was knowledge. It was proprietary knowledge, right? Now that's all out of the wazoo. In the same way, energy will probably take the same path because just the natural human instinct is we will, if we optimize and saturate, then we'll distribute. So if we're optimizing energy and we're saturating the markets with energy needs, then likely distribution comes next. And so I think the idea of, you know, like the idea of energy is just going to become the whole conversation now because that's sort of the last dependency in the stack, right? Like we've gone down in the depth of knowledge as human beings over hundreds of years, and we're sort of now at the bottom of the glass almost, but the final boss, let's say. And I think that's wild. And I think a lot of people have already met and fought the final boss before in history. Let's say Leonard Euler, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, all these like Nikola Tesla, all these cats, they've already seen it. They get it. And I think that is sort of what's going to be unlocked. And, you know, like, it's not to say it's a certainty, but look, the natural evolution is most likely. Like, and the perfect case in point is, look at Google and that. They've outgrown. What happens when Google outgrows or a startup outgrows their data centers? They create their own. And so Google's got their own cloud hosting, Apple's got clouds, all that shit. And they have to kind of figure it out themselves because they become so big that no one can service them. So they've actually got to do it all in-house. Energy's the same. They're going to say, well, no one can supply us enough energy for Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude or whoever it is. And so they're going to say, well, we need to figure this out ourselves. And that's why, you know, nuclear reactor companies are coming to the light now. There's a company called Radiant that's building nuclear reactors that are sort of a shipping container size. And the idea is you drop them on your farm or you drop them in your wherever, power forever, basically. And so that's why you look at all the Microsoft and Google, and they're all in conversations with these sort of nuclear companies because they're like, well, this is going to be an opportunity for us to have our own nuclear reactor. And it sounds wild to think about, but that'll probably be the tip of the iceberg where everyone starts going on nuclear and then someone will have a breakthrough that smashes nuclear out of the park. And then but the idea is that these breakthroughs will happen faster and faster. Like, you know, it takes 1,000 years to figure out how to build the wheel. And, you know, then it takes another 500 years to make a computer and then the next 10 years to make the internet. And then the next 1 year to make, you know, something wild or whatever. And that compression is just nuts. And so, yeah, if we look at all the tea leaves, basically, everyone's needing energy. Energy's the whole conversation. Because there's going to be two currencies, basically. You spend energy on either information or value. And Bitcoin is the network that gets the value. And any AI systems or LLMs or whatever, these data centers, basically, training these models, they're going to be the currency of knowledge, basically. So you either, all energy is going to be flowing to either the knowledge or into value. But everything else will be considered a waste, basically, because you know, that's how I think about it anyway. And so with these two really big, hungry energy systems, one for knowledge and one for value, we're going to think it's foolish to spend energy on anything else because as a team, as a species, if we spend our energy on knowledge or value, everyone wins because everyone's using the same knowledge or value tool set. And so that's, Bitcoin's wildly unifying in that way. And I don't think we can even sort of grok it properly yet because it's like, but it's sort of like, you know, you look at these connectivity tools, English. English is fantastic. It's the most common second language on earth. Bitcoin, it's a fantastic currency. Everyone can access it. The internet, everyone can access it. these tools become real unifiers and they bring us together in a way. Now, yeah, we're going through teething issues as a species because we're bringing everyone together for the first time. Now everyone's, you know, much more immigration and stuff. And so there is these friction points and stuff like that, which we're learning and ironing out, and I'm sure we'll resolve it. But, you know, the trend is everyone's on the same team. Now, it doesn't mean like global elitists planning the future. That just means not fucking retards, where it's like, hey, I get it. You're from Africa. I'm from Australia. But hey, man, we're stuck on Earth. Like, you know, like not talking to the man. It's more just saying like common human decency, where we sort of understand that we're all in the same boat. And just because I got born in Australia, I got lucky. Like, that's literally luck of the draw. That's like winning lotto getting born in Australia, you know? And it's like, that's kind of sort of understanding that a lot of it is not a skill-based thing, it's a circumstance-based thing. And I think as we become more clear-headed and less paranoid about our own resources, right? Like if you've only got one sandwich and there's 10 people saying, can I have a bit? Can I, you're like, fuck off. Like you're going to be very protective of that. But if you've got all the sandwiches in the world, you're like, yeah, man, dude, eat until you're full. Like have as many as you want. So if energy isn't scarce anymore, the idea to fight over something is diminishes, and a lot of the fights are related to preserving and securing resources, and that's a country's obligation to do that for its customers, not customers, but its citizens. And so that's why, you know, the best way is to have it naturally and on your home turf. That's beautiful. But if you don't have that, then you've got to figure it out. But the idea is that it won't be a precious commodity. It's like, you know, photos used to be valuable. Now they're a dime a dozen. Artwork used to be valuable. Now it's a dime a dozen because everyone just goes AI art this. And it's like, now it doesn't mean people appreciate it as much, but the more easy something is to reproduce, the faster its value declines. And so as we enter this sort of easily reproducible energy, the idea that we fight and kill each other over energy will become really foreign. Just like we look back at, you know, some of these wars and we're like, man, how the fuck did they let that happen? Like, what were the people thinking? Or, you know, shit like that, where it's like, it's almost like they weren't conscious then. It's like, how was people not thinking? We're just much smarter than that generation because we're exposed to way more scenarios through being exposed to much more information. So our consciousness is much higher because we can empathize with more scenarios. So we look back in history and it looks silly, some of the decisions that have been made. People are going to look back at us in the same way and be like, dude, they didn't even have energy abundance. Oh, my God. Yeah, no wonder they hated each other because they were petrified. If it ran out, that's like running out of oxygen in underwater, you know? And so, yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost like every country's in scuba diving and some people's, you're like, fuck, well, I'm taking your scuba tank too just in case we run out. Well, I'm bigger than you. I need more air, you know? It's like, hey, fuck, I need air too, you know? It's kind of, we're fighting over the scuba tanks, but, you know, eventually someone will make the infinite scuba tank. And I think it's already been there. I think, you know, fiat money, like look at, you study. I used to listen to read about all these economists and stuff and really follow their work. And not, actually, that's bullshit. I didn't really do that. But, you know, you respected the authority that when someone said, oh, they're economists, you're like, oh, man. Now you know that everyone's retarded, not even being polite. Like it's like, no, they're objectively wrong. Or sorry, objectively wrong in my opinion, but in theirs, they might not be wrong. I think, you know, we had fiat money and fiat economies. I think fiat physics is about to get its reveal. And so, you know, fiat physics is like, you know, it's the bullshit, not the truth in a way. Like it's the bullshit, sort of the manufactured surface layer of it. Kind of like, oh, this is money, guys. This is the final money. It's fiat money. It's like, I don't know about that. I think there's a better option out there, you know? In the same way with physics, it's like, guys, it's the best we can do. We've got to burn 1,000 tons of fuel to get off the ground. It's like, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. The universe sort of doesn't play games like that. The universe is very fair, kind of like Satoshi with there's no pre-mind. And so like, it should be every person that's born has the tools within them to access the greatest potential of the universe, let's say. Like in a totally fair universe, if you're making a video game, you'd be like, all right, well, look, okay, let's say people spawn in the video game, but everyone's got the ability to beat the boss. And it's like, okay, cool, okay. So it's in us. And so that's where it actually becomes quite religious, because when you look at it from this premise of fairness and equality in the universe, in particles, but equilibrium, let's call it, not equality, that's sort of a burnt word from all the DEI bullshit, but let's call it equilibrium. Positive, negative reactions, opposite, equal, and opposite reactions. I forgot what I was going to say. What are you talking about? Equilibrium, universe.
You're put into a video game where you can create perfect universe.
Yeah, it's got to be fair, where every particle can become any other particle almost. And so when you look back at religions, a lot of religions almost found this same premise to be true, where it's like, and you know, like you think about Christ consciousness and, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think like a lot of it relates to almost saying like, hey, energy, everyone is a different manifestation of energy, basically. But everyone has the ability to manifest as any kind of energy. Now, a better way to think about, because people sort of say, I'm manifesting, well, you fucking hippie. No. Think about it this. Imagine every energy identity. So I've got an electrical current in my body. You've got one. You know, the air conditioning unit's got one. My phone's got one or whatever. Imagine there's all different identities, but think of them like every electrical current is like a pixel becoming something else. So on your television screen, you can have a pixel, but it can turn, it can be, you know, the sax, it can make lots of pixels can make up the saxophone in an image, or it can make up your headphones, or it can make up my eyes, but they're converting into whatever they need to be, but they can become and represent anything you need. Do you know what I mean? That's what pixels do. They're like this malleable thing that can magically turn into everything. That's us. We're the same thing. And it's sort of like that concept that we're just pixels within this universe. Instead of a 2D screen, it's more of a 3D screen. I feel like that's kind of where the composition of lots of little pixels, just like me on your screen right now is a composition of lots of little pixels. My personality is a composition of lots of interactions with these pixels. Let's say moments in time that have shaped myself and my identity. And I know it sounds very sort of philosophical and a bit nebulous, but I think these are all going to become very real, tangible conversations. I think, you know, the relationship between energy, religion, and history is going to be a big conversation. And I think as a species, we've just come, Bitcoin, you know, you come for the money, but you stay for everything else. And what's the everything else? Well, the discipline, the education, the knowledge, it really, once you change your baseline root ingredient to your life, which is money, because it's the root of everything, you want to go say hi to your friend? Money. You want to go say goodbye to your mum on a holiday? Money. You know, everything is money orientated. Every decision is filtered through a filter of money. Can I? Yes or no. Do I have enough money? Yes or no. Do I have enough time? Yes or no. And if I don't have enough time, it's because I don't have enough money. You know, like they're all related. And so like we're going to come roundabout to this sort of new frame of reference as a species, I reckon, which is bound on our money. Because if our money is very, you know, cooked and dishonest, then it's likely that transcends and bubbles up into our spirit and our personality and our behaviors. But if we can sort of migrate to a more disciplined, focused money, which is predictable, like that's wild. Like imagine being able to predict how much money you're going to have in 20 years because of your actions today. No guesswork involved because you're on a predictive timeline. And it's sort of like that's a choice people make. They get to choose between, you know, risk and predictability, but they're both inverted. You got higher risk, lower predictability. Higher predictability, lower risk. And the most predictable thing that we know of, other than the sun rising tomorrow, is the next Bitcoin block being mined. Like that, the uptime of Bitcoin is, you know, we haven't built anything that's had as much uptime as a species. Like we're not really anyway, that with that level of resilience. And so like the sun rises tomorrow, the Bitcoin block's going to have another block height in 10 minutes. And I think that persistence is going to become groundbreaking. It's so elegant and small, but it's almost like this ingredient that changes how you see everything because you're like, well, I know I'm not getting debased, so I don't need to rush and figure out how to punt my savings on some fund manager to hope I get 18%, to hope I beat the 16% inflation. You don't need that. You can kind of go, okay, I'm 20. I need to get to 1.5 Bitcoins by the time I'm 30 or whatever. And I know it because you know, oh, Bitcoin's going to be worth this much or whatever. Now, yes, it might be a bad run and Bitcoin might crash and burn, sure. But you're backing the right horse. You're not backing, like, it's the right horse to back. And if you're young right now, you don't have a choice. And I've said this before to people, but it's like your obligation, your responsibility to you, future you, is to learn about Bitcoin. In the same way, like, you know, if you talk to your 16-year-old self, hey, eat healthy and don't do drugs or whatever. Same thing. Eat healthy, don't do drugs, and learn about Bitcoin. Like, that's like, you know, if you had a spirit guide come back, they'd probably add that in the mix with like, hey, be good to your parents, don't do drugs, eat clean, you know. The tips from, yeah, the most powerful tips possible, I think. But, yeah, it's like, otherwise you will turn into, you're strictly just gambling. You'll be gambling with your whole paycheck every week, whatever it is, to try and punt a winner to hopefully break out of, like, you know, like, you basically to break you through into some sort of level of relief where you're like, oh, I'm ahead for a second. Oh, well, don't worry, it's coming out next year. They're going to print more money and you're going to have to do it again. It's like, oh, God. And the stress of that, like, the stress is wild. And it becomes like, it eats into every part of your life, because now when you're not at work, you're figuring out, what's my side hustle going to be? And it's just, everything is just demanding your time. And when it demands your time, it means that you don't get the time to think for yourself about what's important to you, because you're only thinking, oh, fuck, how do I figure this out? And it's like, you got to realize sometimes, like, whoa, there's a slow motion version of the game and it's called Bitcoin. If you've got the patience, you're good and you can be here for a long ride. But it will provide, because money is so rooted in everything, all of our decisions, when you have a clear money or like a very predictable money, a lot of your decisions become very easy to understand and predictable, because you've narrowed the scope of the busy work in your life. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty crazy, but like, it's just like, it's, we're not bullish enough. Like CK says it the best, like literally, we're just not bullish enough. Like, you just, it's like, it's like a Rorschach painting or whatever, where it's sort of like, value is in the eye of the beholder. Why is Bitcoin valuable to you? Oh, because it goes up all the time. Well, it's valuable to me because I can check it whenever I want. It's valuable to me because I know it won't break. Whatever it is, everyone's got their different, you know, sense of appeal. Yeah, wild.
Yeah, we're not bullish enough on the number go up or how much it's going to catalyze a massive paradigm shift. Yes. For everything. It's going to paradigm shift that ushers in all these other paradigm shifts, you know, because you talked about the energy side in there. Yeah. There are so many of these things out there. And I completely agree with what you said, where I feel like we used to have amazing energy harnessing technology that was wiped under the rug. Very similar to how we, like, another one I explore a lot is diet and health, you know.
Yep.
Humans used to all eat tons of meat and eggs and milk every day, and everyone was super healthy. We were grounding, you know, we were outside in nature all the time. And all of this has just been wiped under the rug. So now when you go to the doctor, they say, don't eat meat, don't eat eggs.
Yeah.
Eat, like, more fruits and vegetables. And, you know, it's, they don't know anything about light and circadian rhythms or grounding or red light therapy. Any of this really good stuff.
It's such a narrow agenda that it just looks now, because we've got so much knowledge on all the other agendas that could be other paths that you could take, it just looks naive and it looks almost like manipulated, where it's like you're only saying this, you're repeating and parroting this same line. Oh, you know, eat your fruit, eat your veg. There's no science, like there's not no science, but there's no like actual critical
thing. No good science.
Yeah, no good science. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. And it's just like, you know, you think, oh, well, think about all the technology advancements we've had. No, I won't. That's all funny bullshit. I'm going to think about how many people are unhappy, how many people are in bad relationships, how many people are depressed, how many people are killing themselves. That's probably a better marker for intelligence or progress in civilization. So birth rates are down. People are killing themselves more. Like, something ain't adding up. Yeah, it's like, oh, but I've got an iPhone in my hand. It's like, well, good for you. Cool. And use it when you jump off a bridge because you're so unhappy from your dopamine depleting. It's like, you know, we've got to kind of have a good compass on what progress is. Is progress getting an iPhone from that big to that big and then paying $4,000 for it? Or is progress, oh, our population increased for the first time in 25 years? Or, you know, number, you know, because in Australia, males kill themselves once every 5.5 hours. Like, that's wild. And no matter what you tell me, I ain't listening to no new iPhone bullshit when you tell me, oh, we're the most advanced version of ourselves we've ever been. But that doesn't sound advanced. Or if wherever we're going, it doesn't sound like people like it because they're trying to tap out too early. It's like, dude. So I think these kind of conversations are, you know, hard ones, but they're perspective-driven ones that I think the world will start reflecting on a bit more. And I think because Bitcoin has a value system, or it's a protocol, right? So it's got a specific set of rules that we know don't change. We ain't increasing the cap. We've got 2-week difficulty adjustments or whatever, and blah, blah, blah. There's these rules that we stick by. And I think that's going to inject a lot of frameworks for values into life. So religion, I think people are going to find a lot of religion in the next 5 or 10 years. I think it's going to become a huge North Star. No, it doesn't matter what religion, but I think it's less about that. And it's more about people finding something bigger than themselves. And I think that's one of the appeals of Bitcoin as well, is because when you work in the community or you're supporting the community, you know that every time you put the shovel into the ground to do some work, you know that it's benefiting many more people than just yourself, you know, because many other people use this network. And so whether it's mining or whether it's running a node or whether it's building a service or an application or whether it's educating like you, Ben, like talking on podcasts, whatever, it's all good for the gander or whatever. Rising tide lifts all boats. And I think the idea of believing in something bigger than ourselves is also really important for our characters. From an ego perspective, without religion, we walk around saying, you know, we know everything. Agnostic, I'm an atheist because I know there's no God. You don't know what you had for breakfast last week. Shut the fuck up. Like, literally, though, it's like, sure, everyone can argue everything. But the reality is there is unknown questions that you will never have the answer for. So it's probably best not to act like you've got all the answers, you know. You've got to leave that window in your brain to say, you know what, I'm probably wrong. And that leaves window for, you know, improvement in your thought patterns. But yeah, this idea of religion being, you know, people say, Bitcoin's like a religion or a cult. Yeah, religion, 10 commandments. Yeah, it's got 10 rules to the protocol. Don't increase the cap, 10 minute block times, 2-week difficulty adjustments. It has rules, but rules make things easy to follow and easy to understand and easy to predict. And that's why
they can unify a community of people because they have the same values. It helps people really move forward together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, when you meet someone and you've got like, you know, now it's really exciting. I'm sure every time you go to see people in Bitcoin or you have conversations with them, that immediate alignment is so refreshing. It feels comforting as well. Not in a weird way, just like your soul feels like, hey, yes, you're not crazy. You're assimilated with these people. And you get along straight away. Not maybe perfectly, but like 60% of your life outlook is probably the same in a way in certain patches. And then there's these bits in between that we fill in the gaps with our own niche things that we love. But that whole idea of people having a common rule book, let's say, to play with. But if there's no rule book and everyone's an atheist and everyone knows the answers to everything and everyone's better than everyone, blah, 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 there's some level of religion brings back humility, I think. And that's pretty important, especially as a species when we're running so aggressively and growing so quickly. Sometimes it's good just to go, well, hang on, shh, just like cool down a second. Let's find some faith. Let's start, you know, says something better than us. Let's assume there is, and let's always assume there is, because if we don't, then we'll never keep striving for answers and something better. And so I think the premise of putting some religious beliefs into our, you know, the way that we operate an economy is important. It gives values. These values provide, you know, a healthy framework for living and growing and succeeding in an economy, right? But I think it definitely helps when you have some sort of belief in a higher power. And I'm not saying that your higher power might be just energy systems. It doesn't have to be a white dude in a cloak or whatever, you know, like it doesn't have to be the typical, fast, son, Holy Spirit. It's whatever you believe it to be. But it's sort of like, you know, you have respect for something beyond yourself because you know that it can't just be you. It's like, well, if it's just you, well, congratulations, we're all on your TV show and you're the most important person in the universe. Probably not the case. And the idea, I just think, yeah, that the frameworks to operating a life, because when you don't have a framework, everything is rudderless. And when you're building products, for example, in like engineering or whatever, when you make a product for everyone, you make a product for no one. And let's translate that from products to governance or governments. When you make rules for everybody, you make rules for nobody. And a great case in point in that is California. Oh, no, we'll accommodate you and we'll accommodate you. Yeah, you're all right. Yeah. cool. The cops can't do anything to anyone ever because everyone's got their own rule book and no one knows what the fuck day of the week it is. Dude, I'm not even joking. I saw this with my own eyes, not even joking. You walk into Walgreens. You know Walgreens? Man, walk in there, go to get like Powerade or something. You go in there, dude, there was a dude on a bicycle with his arm on the shelf just sweeping shit into the front of the basket. And there's a cop there, like a renter cop, you know, security guard. And I'm like...
This was in San Francisco, I'm assuming, when you lived there. Yeah.
I'm like, well, what's that? Like, can I do that too? Like, am I allowed to get free shit? And he's like,
no,
well,
you're white, dude. You don't get to do that.
No. You're like, fuck out of here. But he's like, but the idea was that they can't sue for anything, or they can't file basically the claims for anything under $1,000 just get dismissed. And so people would steal up to $1,000 knowing that it's victimless. So as in like, you can't get charged for less than $1,000 theft or something like that. Anyway, I'm butchering the example. Basically that's the nuts and bolts of it. So people will literally have lock boxes like on the toothpaste section because people were rotting toothpaste. You go to Safeway. Hi, can I get the shampoo? Yeah, hold on. I'll get the attendant. Call them over. Like unlocks the thing. I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? And that's because the security guard can't do anything. What, he's going to punch the guy's going to get cracked in the head by this dude or stabbed or something, and now he's getting $18 an hour. He can't go home to his wife because he's in hospital because he got stabbed because some dude was stealing 100 tubs of toothpaste. It's like, it's all just cooked. Like, hit the reset button. Nope, bye, didn't work, sorry. And I'm sure there's ways to – governments and governance I don't think is a bad thing. I actually think restoration and order is really important, but I think you can achieve it not from coercion, but you can achieve it from – like you can actually achieve it. If you're good at your job, you can figure out a way to keep people, you know, happy in your civilization. But I think religions help with governing lots of people as well because it keeps people – you know, it's like the same thing. We learn this when we're little. Oh, Santa Claus, he's watching all year. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. So even when I'm not looking, don't be a shithead. And you're like, oh, fuck, okay. And you're sort of like, oh, fuck, Santa's really onto this. And, you know, you're 5 years old and you're like, you know what? I'm not taking the lolly out of the lolly jar when mum told me not to because I know this cunt's sort of all seen. He's watching me somehow. But that sort of helps us kind of believe in a small way. It helps sort of understand, hey, someone's, all, you know, it's keeping an eye on you, but make sure you're 24/7, you know, following, you know, being good or whatever, you know what I mean? And I think that's like a little sampler to kind of like the 10 commandments or whatever, you know, whatever your book of choice is. But, you know, this rule book or this framework for operating, it helped like when every person has a different way of operating, that becomes hard to govern. Because again, you're trying to fit 500,000 million people into, you know, these very fixed baskets where it just becomes impossible. And so I really do think that religion makes a big comeback. And I think you're already seeing it now, but it's something I've been really believing would happen because there's just too little out there if you don't have it. What, you're going to buy the next iPhone? Buy the next one. Buy the next one. Keep buying the next iPhone. You start feeling real empty real soon. You know?
Buy three of the next iPhone.
Yeah, And don't worry, we've already made the next five. We're just drip feeding them because we've got quarterly reports.
Yeah, intentionally cutting off the technology so they can sell you something later. Apple has been caught putting out 100%. Faulty products that intentionally break so they can sell you more later.
100%. And you know what? If that's the rules of the game, good luck to them. But I just think the game needs to let's revisit the rule book. And I think it's really interesting, actually, because like, money and law, or let's call it value and law, right? If we have laws to protect people's value, all right, like you don't have laws for no reason. You got laws to protect resources and shit. I think the problem is where you separate the book of law from the book of value, where Bitcoin, like, you know, it's said very early on, code is law. And that means like, if you can do it on the network, fair game. But if you can't, you won't be able to do it. And so when you have a separate money system and a separate rule book that need to be cross-checked with each other, that's where you get room for discrepancies. Money printing, bad policy, blah, 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 because they're not looking at each other. Oh, don't tell them. Quick, sweep this policy in with this 15,000-word document and just cram it in there. Yeah, what's it say? Oh, everyone gets a boat. Oh, great. We're just going to print that money? Yeah. Oh, fucking great. But you can't do that if the money printer is talking to the law, the legal system, if they only work together, which is what Bitcoin does, because Bitcoin is the rules for value transfer. And so it's both the issuer and the rule maker. And I think that's really powerful because it's the same guy you're talking to. Because if something's outside the law, then the guy who made the money needs to know about it. And having those two fragmented gives room for error. Not saying room for corruption, but just say room for error. Human errors, human problems. It allows human flaws to enter the conversation. And I think that's what Bitcoin also seals up pretty airtight. It's, you know, well, actually, to be honest, Bitcoin does that by default, but it's the people that support Bitcoin, the node operators, that actually protect that. Because here's the thing, there's different attacks that can come on Bitcoin now. Let's say you've got MicroStrategy says, we've got heaps of Bitcoin and there's a huge audience of Bitcoin operators and, you know, stuff like that are in MicroStrategy. And one day they say, well, MicroStrategy is proposing a new upgrade to the Bitcoin network and all master holders or MicroStrategy MSTR holders, they'll all get a dividend of the fork coin back to their thing or something like that. You start having this lens for social attacks where they say, look, we're going to fork off, and they give a spiel of why it's worth forking off and changing the rules and blah, blah, blah. And people can get sold on that because they've got investments in that. Like there's got another, you know, foot in, they got one foot in the door of MSTR and one foot in the door of Bitcoin. Now, I don't think that's the case, but I'm just saying that's a hypothetical. If you've got 100 companies that all go MicroStrategy style, then that becomes more of a possibility where they're going to incentivize, oh, well, we're going with the fork. Like, let's say there's a big contentious fork. It's like, oh, well, Riot, or, you know, let's say some company that's on a Bitcoin standard like MicroStrategy said, we're going with the fork. And anyone that's a shareholder of us, they get divvied up all of our coins from our reserve from the fork coin or whatever it is. You start getting these extra carrots involved where it can be problematic. And like through the block size wars, I just realized, like, from my team of people, like the team that I was on, they were so smart and maxi-like, like there were heaps of maxis. And I wasn't really like that at the start. I was more like, ah, nah, I'm sure we can all get along. They're like, nah, ain't happening. And I was like, oh, okay, yes, boss. Yeah, I literally got them to write the email saying, no, we're not participating in the SegWit2x upgrade at the time. And that was like, fuck, yeah, it was 2017, Jesus. But that sort of stuff is like, you need to run a node, you need to custody your coins, and, you know, you need to try and figure out ways to make the network prosper. And these, like, these social attacks that are becoming more prominent, that's part of the growth, right? New growth, new attack vectors. And I think everyone's got to keep their wits about them, where it's like, not to be skeptical, like, because remember, the goal for Bitcoin is to live as long as possible. If it's adding this much value to us, imagine what it can do for humanity over years and years of constant immutability. That's like, we got to think bigger than us. We got to think beyond ourselves. We got to think, oh, how do I pump my bags today? It's like, no, well, what can I do for Bitcoin? Like, is there anything I can do? Maybe it's educating. Maybe it's spreading the word. Maybe it's telling a family member about it, you know? But I think you feel like you're on a team. You feel like you belong in a way, in a weird way. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to say it. Maybe that's just me because I'm shit at sports. So I'm like never really on the team or a team. So it's sort of like maybe that's just feel like belonging to something. I don't know. But it's pretty cool. I just think it's cool. It's like, fuck, I really feel like we just got lucky. Like as in like being born now, it's like, whew. Because the people, if this is as big as we think it could be, it's going to be like, these people were around in like the first 20 years of it. Can you imagine? It's like we're getting to be there.
Imagine getting Bitcoin under $10 million a coin. That's crazy.
Oh my God. How ridiculous. It's like, you know, and that was before all the coins were mined. Yeah, way before. It was when they just started mining. It's like, oh my God. It's like seeing, you know, the bricks being laid in the pyramids. That's exactly how I think about it. It's like, I know what I'm looking at is going to be one of the greatest wonders of humanity, like, or history or whatever. And that's why I'm just like sort of getting ahead of myself where I'm thinking, holy shit. And you start thinking too far ahead because you start thinking, oh, well, that's going to happen. Then this must happen. Then that. And you kind of just start thinking, wow, you're just in awe, like this mega structure. Now, yes, it's not physical, but I did a video with this guy, this brilliant guy, about comparing the amount of energy it takes to move one of the stones in the pyramid and how much actual energy it took to make that pyramid, and then guesstimated, all right, if it takes that much for that many stones, let's translate how much energy we put into the Bitcoin network and see how big that pyramid would be. Dude, it is, I'll send it to you after this, but it's like it goes to the moon. Like the base of the pyramid extends to the moon, like from Earth. It's ridiculous. But, you know, and future civilizations will probably look back at us being like, how do they get, you know, all that shit together? How do they figure that out? The same way we think about that with the pyramids. But, you know, then talking about the pyramids, like not conspiracy, but like Egyptians left so many clues of knowledge. Like when you're building a pyramid, you don't go, let's make it, I don't know, that high and this high. No, every number on it is specific. Every design choice is very intentional. We don't think about it like that because we go, well, we're ephemeral with our choices because we can just do it again. No, dude, they had to quarry shit. There was no internet. There was no second chance. There was nothing. So everything had to be planned so meticulously. So I think that's a big mystery that will probably get unraveled pretty soon, like in, you know, the next 10 or 15 years. And then I think that will bring us back to geometry and classical mechanics for the universe and physics. See, Einstein and Tesla were both worlds apart in their perception on everything. But it was more, they believed the same thing, but just way different ways of coming at it. Basically, Einstein was like, yeah, physics equals mc squared and this and that, and the motion, the velocity and da, 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 da. And Tesla was like, that's cool. We're in a universe. It's like everything's a pixel, everything's energy, and everything is malleable, and it's got a frequency and a vibration, and that's its identity. Just like you've got a first name and a birthday, or name and a birthday, that particle has got a frequency and a vibration, and everyone's got a name and a birthday, everyone's got a frequency and vibration. And so he was basically saying like, hey, dude, your shit is really good. Thanks, Einstein. It's good, but like it's fucking confusing. It doesn't need to be that confusing, dude. Like you're really making it hard. And Einstein's equation is E equals mc squared. And I think what Tesla's stuff is so geometry focused and so numerical based, he's basically saying, yeah, E equals mc squared is the same as a circle is pi r squared. You just translate the radius squared to the blast radius of light, which is c squared, which means how much does this particle blow light out at 333,333 kilometers per second. And that's like the radius of how fast will its impact zone. And so basically it's like the radius of a circle. And that was my belief after looking at reading both of their stuff. They both said, they both basically say, yeah, it's predictable. Like the universe is deterministic almost. Like it's not probabilistic or whatever. Like quantum mechanics and stuff is, it's almost like, I think of it more like a Cardano versus Bitcoin kind of thing. And like a lot of people have got a problem with that, but I just think no matter what happens when they get back to it, it'll come back down to classical mechanics and stuff like that. So, but anyway, that's something I could definitely be wrong on, and I'm happy to be wrong, but it's very hard. The numbers don't lie. Like numbers behave like, I mean, this is another thing. So like, I think one thing Bitcoin will teach us as well is the power a number has, because let's say a number, numbers don't do anything. Well, let's try that. So if I know your number, your private key, that's going to change your life. Because no matter what I tell you, if I know that number, your life will change. Because you're going to log in one day and there's no coins there. Now that your whole trajectory, your path has changed. That's just because you looked at a number and someone else looked at a number. So can it change? Now, yes, it's the cause and effect is much more elegant and subtle because we can't see, you know, like we see a car hit another car as big boom and sound and all this, all these things that hit our senses that tell us, whoa. But we don't see that with these tiny interactions like viewing or observation. So I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting stuff. I think guys in history, I think a lot of work from history will be unearthed as kind of like the answer almost. And if you think it's like, oh, well, what would they know? They didn't have iPhones and they didn't have the internet. No, but they had clarity of thought. So like, you know, you're like natives in the Amazon where they know what the birds are doing. They know what the monkeys are doing. Like they're almost one with the environment, very acclimatized. We are the same, but it's almost like where our environment is the internet now and that we're very understanding of that. But, you know, think about the people back in the day. There wasn't like nearly as like the amount of thoughts, headspace they have to think clearly. They look up at the night sky There's no pollution. It's just smothered in stars. Like, what does that do? That's like the amount of wonder that that would inject into someone's brain every night. These guys are walking around probably 10x the understanding of the land and the earth and energy that we have, because we've been really good at making distractions. They weren't great at making distractions. They were great at doing work, and because everything was hard work. And so that probably, one, would make their brains in a better state because of the amount of physical labor that's going to produce more electrons in your brain and shit like that. But yeah, I reckon we discount it hard. And so much so to the point where it's like, how could it be so ignored? It almost feels like it's trying to purposely be smothered or ignored. And I don't mean that in like tinfoil hat way, but I just mean like, what fucking idiot on the planet would not investigate all their time and energy into how someone built the pyramids? And why is it an unanswered question? We can put men on the moon, apparently, but we can't answer that. Stupidest thing I've ever heard. And that's where I start smelling a rat, especially when people go, nah, it's not that important, it's the pyramids. The most printed document on earth is the $1 bill, probably, right? That's the most printed piece of paper, I would imagine. Right there, front and center, I'm pretty sure there's a big pyramid on it. That makes it, I mean, oh, it's not important. We'll just chuck it on this most important
with
piece
like
of real
estate. With like the Illuminati eye above it, by the way.
The all-seeing eye.
That's weird.
Totally fine. Well, I actually think of that from geometry. I think of the all-seeing eye part as sort of like a, if it happens here, it will be able to reach or manifest everything below it. So it's sort of like the tip of the iceberg. Like it's sort of like that's the root point of explosion. Not explosion, but it's like, that root point of the tip of a pyramid is kind of like everything came before it depends on that being lined up. So if that's lined up, you can sort of trace back and predict every other sort of spot on this pyramid almost, or the way that the energy converges into the tip of a pyramid. But yeah, don't oh yeah, we just chucked it in there because we thought it, I don't know, you know, sort of feeling kind of triangly, you know, kind of got it, a little trapezoidal prism. It's like, Give me the meat and potatoes. I want to know exactly why, you know? And it's like, I tried to study a lot, like the motivations and like who built the pyramid and who was the architect of the pyramid and what was he like and what was his vibe about and shit. And everything just comes back to geometry. Like Tesla went and looked at the pyramids and he's like, oh fuck. Okay. These cunts knew what, pardon my language. These guys knew what was up because he was looking at the ratios of everything. And everything's golden ratio. Everything's about 2 pi or 4 pi and all these kind of like bing, 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 bing. And it's like they're trying to send a message. Like if you're building a structure that big, you want to tell the entire history of the unit. You want to tell the entire civilization what you know. And that's why I think it's like a compression of every bit of knowledge they know. As far as like, you know, the sizes of the chambers, the acoustics of the chambers and stuff like that. It's almost like a giant Easter egg field present for every other species or civilization that comes. And I think we need to kind of look at that and be like, all right, well, what were they trying to say here? How did they do it? And have an actual model. Like people talking about fucking waterfalls and blowing water up and all these. It's like, dude, it's most likely pulleys and levers. Like, and it's, I'm sorry, that's not the aliens that came down and zapped it from the sky. It might be levitating through sound. I think that's probably pretty feasible. Their relationship with these primitive technologies is far greater than ours because they're an area of research. We're trying to make new technologies. They're trying to use the tools they've been given. So it comes back to this kind of like, there's no pre-mine. Like if we can be a species of greatness, we shouldn't have to invent something else. The tools should be here. Like, because everything came to be through light and sound and energy or whatever. They're just the same. So they'd be like, well, fuck, we must be able to do this. Like, surely we can do it, right? So their understanding of cymatics and stuff like that, you know, sound waves, visualizing sound waves, is next level. And we see all these clues in the patterns that they draw all over these temples. And we just think, oh, wow, they really like those diamondy repeating fractal patterns or whatever. No, they're trying to say like, it's almost like graffiti where it's like, but they're using sound waves because everyone has sound waves. So if I give the sound, if I write, you know, Michael Dunworth, it's like, well, that's English. Someone might know English in the future. But if everyone's got sound in the future, okay, well, let's record our information through these sound patterns because that I know that everyone will be able to reproduce and there's no pre-mine. And so their idea of how to translate messages or project messages into the future was far, far more intelligent than ours. We build shit for us and we call ourselves the kings of the world. We're still talking about the Egyptians. They're running history right now. They've got the biggest dicks in the room. Like, we'd be honored to be able to do something at the scale that they've done. Now, it's not to say, oh, you know, we could never recreate it. We could, but the ingenuity, we couldn't. Like, the creativity that they've gone through to produce something like that, wild, like fucking nuts. But yeah, I think, like, you know, someone was saying, oh, how are they going to pull and pulleys and levers don't work. I watched the Mr. Beast, a clip from the Mr. Beast games show that he does, and he had these 10-ton boulders or 5-ton boulders, and there was four teams, and they all had to get the boulder to the top. It was raised about 25 meters. And I was watching that, and the first thing I was thinking was, like, okay, perfect example, because I'm trying to find an example of people pulling shit to make something really heavy go up, and how long does that take? And if I had 20,000 slaves, would it take much longer, or is it unfeasible? Dude, there's four teams of 250 people, and they take 18 seconds to pull the 2-ton thing to the top. I got 20,000 slaves and 20 years on the clock. I'm pretty sure I'll be able to figure a way to stack all these blocks together.
Was it that steep angle, though, of the pyramid? Or was it like a generally gradually...
It was vertical. It was vertical. So really? They had to raise it 20 meters high in the air, like... So, like, it was literally on a string. They were all running back. Like, you know that, like, the rock's here and the string's there and it goes back to them and they're, like, pulling it here and goes... And I thought that was pretty impressive. Look, even if it's 40 seconds, okay, it takes 40 seconds to elevate a block 25 meters. Now add in elephants, rhinoceros, horses, whatever you want to call it. They're pulling too. And when you got all these resources, we forget, like, we have two hands. Like, we know, like, we're capable. Like, and many hands make light work. But we just see it and go, no way anyone could build that. The same way, dude, like us today, I'm looking at the Harbour Bridge. They built that without a calculator. There was not a calculator around. And in my head, I'm like, well, how'd they do it? It's impossible. There's no way you could do that without a calculator. And if I think that this generator, and I can understand how they did it, and I've done the tour and da-da-da, but it's still, like, wildly impressive, right? People building on the the Empire State Building, the Rockefeller Center, you know, the guys on the beam, just, like, no harnesses, no shit. Everyone's just climbing up and da-da-da. We couldn't think about that. We're so conditioned away from that now. But, you know, if those guys were doing that building, the Rockefeller Center, imagine what people were once upon a time. You know, they used to ride in horseback and stab people with swords and shit. I'm pretty sure they're comfortable climbing a couple of flights of stairs raw dog without harnesses and stuff, you know? And so, yeah, I just think, yeah, I've been yapping hard. Sorry, Ben. But I think it's like, I just think there's heaps of fun stuff coming. That's my take.
100% agree. And I think that really draws back to what we mentioned earlier, how the thing that we're really missing right now is just a unifying inspiration anywhere, you know?
Yes.
Because those civilizations all had that, we can assume, quite strongly.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just, you can even go, and like you said, the pyramid is just one example, but I just had a trip to Mexico recently and just walking around the streets of Mexico City and Oaxaca and, you know, and I also went to this place in San Cristobal where there's so much just ancient architecture everywhere, and some deeply ancient, like in the mountains of Chiapas. Like, we saw this old Mayan outpost in the jungle, which is like this massive cave, and you can see skull shape. You could see skull shapes in the rocks, dude. It's crazy. And so that made you think way back, like, holy, like, what was going through their minds doing this? Like, the scale is insane. And then there's like the slightly less ancient, but still extremely impressive, like the giant cathedrals around Mexico City. And anywhere in Europe you go, there's just these giant, amazing cathedrals, which, again, that's a point for religion. You know, I grew up non-religious, and I'm definitely more open-minded than I've ever been. I haven't really picked a team yet or made any commitments, but you have to give it to them. They built some amazing things because these people were all in a similar track, a similar mindset, and they had that unifying set of commandments, like you said. And this is 100%. Similar.
And you know what?
This can create beautiful things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Bitcoin might be – and that's the thing. When everyone's working together and they know what the goal is, everything moves faster. The best way you can test this, if you don't believe me, in nature, fill a water bottle up, tip it out. Time how long it takes to tip out. Fill it up again, swirl it, and tip it out so it's got a vortex. The vortex will make it run out faster. Why? Well, because when the bubbles are going in, they're all going in randomly into bloop, bloop, and that's why it glugs out. So everyone doesn't know which way they're falling out yet. But when everyone knows, oh, I'm moving that way, and he's moving that way, and he's moving, everyone knows the path that everyone else is taking. So they're all running the same track spiraling out, which means they're pulling each other down the spiral sort of thing as they're running out of the water bottle. But it'll be about 25% faster or some materially like measurable metric. If it takes 1 second, 1.2 seconds to pour out normally, it'll take 1 second or something. And that's because everything is in alignment. Let's talk about
it. It might be even faster than that. Like, I feel like if it's a big enough bottle, it sucks out quickly. It's like double.
It races out, remember. Right? Yeah. And now let's look at that.
Great analogy.
Another similar example. The ocean is a bunch of water droplets not working together. They're just next to each other. But a tsunami is all of those working together. And like the power of that, and everyone's going in the same direction, attached to the same sort of trajectory, everyone moves in a greater force and makes a greater impact. Now, I'm not saying a tsunami is a good thing, but I'm just saying as an example of many water droplets working together, they become one and a wave, and that's powerful. And in the same way, species the same thing. So the faster we can work together and all these little things, like we're sort of slowly putting it together over the, you know, our lifetimes, but all these little ingredients, I think Bitcoin has a chance to be one of those ingredients. It's like, oh man, that's really stitched it all together. You know, like that's it's the skin keeping them, you know, all the organs in or whatever it is, but it's got a part to play. And I think, yeah, that's why I think it's pretty sick. But yeah, all these old buildings are beautiful because we used to take pride in it. But now pride doesn't come from the work. Pride comes from the money. So we got the wrong scoreboard. Like, we should be focused on who can add the most value or inspire the most or whatever it is. In my opinion, making the most money, cool. Like, great. I've got 500 million. Oh, I got 600 million. I'm better than you. No, I can buy anything I want. You can buy anything you want. The end. We're finished. Now what? So it's what happens when you finish the money game. Then what? Like, imagine you're 40 and you know, you're in Bitcoin and you're 30 now and you retire when you're 40 in 10 years' time. Cool. What left? What's left? Oh, I'm going to go have fun and da-da-da. Cool. You'll do that for 4 years. Then what? You still got 35 years you owe us until you die. You got to figure something out. What's your purpose? And so that whole purpose conversation of, well, what's bigger than me? What's something that I can add value to? I think about like Einstein, right? Like, think about this. Einstein makes an equation, E equals MC squared, five characters. The cool thing with an equation is when you make an equation that works and it's a truth, like a physics truth or whatever, that is provable, everyone gets it now out of the box. It's like automatically getting to install your app on everyone's phone. Like, that's the same thing as knowledge. When you uncover a truth, it's kind of like getting this automatic software update for everybody on earth. And so that's why I think these kind of pursuits will become more and more common, where people will have, they'll put all the chips on to doing something beyond themselves. A really interesting angle of this would be someone like Brian Johnson, the dude that's doing the don't die stuff. Like, he started Braintree or whatever, he sold out, crushed it, and now he's like, well, fuck it, I'll use myself as the guinea pig and we'll see what happens. We'll see what's up with these bodies, what's good, what's bad. But he's just doing it all with data and pretty objectively. I don't know if he's right or wrong, but I think more to the point of the behavior of trying to do something bigger or beyond themselves. Now, sure, he's going to try and monetize it, whatever, but I think the bigger goal is to sort of make a mark in history or do something meaningful. And I think that whole do something meaningful thing will come, I think people will have more mental bandwidth as Bitcoin becomes more of a standard and the people on a Bitcoin standard start getting a bit more free time to themselves mentally. Like, they don't feel the cortisol spikes as much as, you know, everyone else, because they're like, well, you know what? Look, I had a shit day, but I'll check the Bitcoin price. Yeah, it's still there. You know, it still exists. You know what I mean? Like, okay, cool. It's up, you know, or something. And it's sort of like, it's almost like having like a chocolate bar or something for dessert, like after a shit day's work. You're like, I still got the coin though. You know, I'm holding onto my sats or whatever, you know? And it's like your little piece of history that you get to keep. I'll tell you what, I'd be going insane if we didn't have Bitcoin. I would be going insane. Like,
I'd be way less optimistic for the future, no doubt.
Dude, you know, I was saying one in five, where every 5 hours a guy kills himself in Australia. It's sort of like that. You'd be like, fuck. And to think, like, I feel sorry for anyone that figured all this out before Bitcoin, like the gold bugs. Gold bugs are like, they're printing money and it's terrible and story value. It's like, I totally had no clue about any of this stuff at all. But now I'm like, imagine being a gold bug for 25 or 30 years, watching them just like print, and everyone's like, woohoo, we got a new iPhone. Like, you fucking moron. Like, cool, we all got a $200 stimulus package. And you'd be like, because they're really like, yeah, they're OG sound money people kind of thing, you know? Like, they saw the forest from the trees much sooner than I did, that's for sure. But fuck, that'd be torture. It'd be like drowning slowly or something. No one can hear you, and you're just like stuck talking about gold. Man,
yeah,
wild.
just all that work understanding the problem so well and just not getting the right solution.
Yes.
And that's why so many of them are just not figuring out Bitcoin, part because like they have so much of a mental ossification around gold for so many years.
100%. And you know what's funny? Imagine this. Imagine that, like, you know, the gold bugs are like, yeah, nah, fuck Bitcoin or whatever. But imagine if, like, there was, like, some quantum computing attack on Bitcoin and it fucked out. But everyone is left with a gold, like, with a sound money mindset. So it's like, gold. And everyone goes to gold. Peter Schiff would be like, told you so. You know, but dude, he's gonna be.
I mean, that would
be
my backup, dude. That's my second place.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything better. Why not?
Yeah. Either that, or I'm gonna have barrels of oil in my apartment. I don't know.
You know, you won't need that, dude, because we're gonna have free energy. Dude, we got
100% Kane.
We need to talk about that, dude. That's the thing that, just for context for listeners, that's the reason why I hit you up, is because. When I did my episode with Mike Hobart, that kind of came up, just this idea of free energy. And I brought up a documentary I'd recently watched from another previous podcast guest named Marian Poles. I'm not sure if you – have you seen the Primordial Code documentary?
No.
Oh, it's super good. And it talks about a lot of these things you've been mentioning too, just the cymatics and the frequencies and how they all come together and how, you know, I am extremely convinced at this point when you look at – the old architecture and you dabble in a Tartaria rabbit hole and, you know, all these different technologies we see that used to be there.
Yep.
There was clearly a system of harnessing energy naturally without needing to do all this stupid bullshit we see today of, you know, burning coal and oil or mowing down fields for solar panels or like nuclear facilities that could blow up. And everyone has a different thought about which of those things is the best. You know, I just yesterday talked to Joe Consorti and he kind of laid out his optimistic vision for the future and he mentioned nuclear. And I kind of like sat back and I'm thinking like, I think we can think a little bigger than that. I think we don't need any of these. Like, I would call them all fiat energy. Would you agree with that?
100%. Yeah, because they're all zero sum. Like, you've got to burn something to do something else. As where I think the free energy stuff will be more electromagnetism related. Like, so it's going to be basically like literally like ripping electrical currents out of what we call thin air. But remember, everything is in this like giant electrical field. It's just converted into the pixels are air. Right now, because that's where I am. I'm in this environment that says these pixels are air. But behind those pixels, sort of like the circuit board behind the matrix, let's say, you can tap into that. Like, you can extract energy direct from the circuit board, which we'd call the field in physics, which is sort of where the universe sits within. It's this, you know, 4D construction or whatever. But that field that's the conversation, I think, where people will go, and Tesla did a lot of that stuff. And it's like, you know, essentially what you're trying to do is just you're trying to manipulate particles really accurately. Like, you're trying to reshape the way that they're forming or whatever. I really think it'll be a massive, massive electromagnetism, basically magnetism and everything orientating around that. Magnets are the goat, like, out of everything. They're so incredible. And it's like, when we think about what we're doing to the Earth, which is a giant magnet, because it's just a giant ball of rock, which is what magnets are, in this context. But if we're going ting, 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 ting for all this fiat energy, imagine a pool ball with lots of dents in it, right? It doesn't roll as well. And so as Earth's flying through the universe, or falling into the sun, should I say, we've got this tail that wraps around us like this bubble of energy, right, that we catch in this field and da-da-da. But if the circle, if the ball is getting damaged, it's going to change kind of like how the weather around the ball, like a slipstream, right? You know when something's flying through a slipstream, you see the wind going over it? If it's not perfectly round anymore, it's going to change the way that the wind goes over it, let's say, which is the way that the energy or the electromagnetism shit from the sun, all this energy that we're getting, it's going to change how that operates on Earth. And so like all this like climate stuff, it's like, I'm not a climate change denier per se, but I just think like, no, it's not from farts from cows. No, it's when you bust up the magnet and start moving different pieces of the magnet all over the world. So we dig all these massive holes and then we chop it up into little bits and put it in everyone's phones and everyone's cars. And now if you're a weather system and following magnetic coordinates and stuff like that, like birds and animals do, right? They're really in tune with the magnetic sort of vibration of the Earth, the magnetic field of the Earth. We're not. We're stupid compared to them. They're in tune with the whole environment, the birds, the
but
dogs.
Are we supposed to be? I think that maybe we've lost a sense somewhere along the way. I think that we should be connected to it.
Or we're yet to acquire it. We're the furthest ones behind in evolution or something. Like we're the youngest per se. We need to evolve more because we're more complex. But yeah, when dogs, tigers, cats, lions, birds, French frogs, frogs, whatever, they all smell the same shit when a tsunami's coming. They would tap out and run away way faster than us. And we're like, duh, I read on the TV that it's coming. And they're like, yeah, well, I got a TV in my brain that tells me it's coming because my TV is way more in tune to my environment to help me survive. Because this is like the Hunger Games. Everything's fucking trying to kill us, whether it's a wave, whether it's a poisoned frog. It's like, so there's more to meets the eye with humans, I reckon. And we're going to evolve eventually. Like, we would have been able to hear sound before we could hear it well. Like our ears would have evolved after we got an eardrum or a cochlear or whatever it is like within our ears. Things like we have a pineal gland or whatever, which that's a big theme, I think, in the Egyptian culture, which is wild because that almost is like a third eye kind of thing. Like it helps you tap into energy that is basically like thoughts, let's call it. And we call them thoughts, but thoughts are sort of a very lightweight template of a real 3D moment, right? When I think about something, it's like almost like a blueprint of a moment where I imagine whether it's a memory or something in the past or the future or whatever. I think there's definitely a whole thing around that. Like, and our bodies, we've got an endocannabinoid processing system in our bodies, which is for weed, but it's already there, which means our body is saying like the cannabinoids or endocannabinoids or whatever it is, they're a thing. Like they're going to be a thing, whether it's we haven't evolved yet to naturally absorb them and understand how to utilize them or whatever. And, let's say marijuana is a way to activate that center, but if the body's got it, it's there for a reason. So we might be, a few generations before this kind of naturally happens. And that would be pretty interesting. I think it's also interesting vibration communications. If you've seen with children now, they're teaching children basically telepathy. Like it's wild. So by feeling vibrations.
Did you hear about the telepathy tapes, that podcast series?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Dude, that's nuts. And now you've got so something I've always loved was Daniel Tammet and like Derek Pavicini, I think it is, but these guys are autistic savants. And so basically superhuman powers. And that means like, those people in like, what did you have for breakfast or what day was it on, June 12th, 1991? And what did you have for breakfast? It was there, 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 and they remember everything. They got hit in the head with a baseball. They remember everything, or they were born with things. Those savants are sort of like, they've got like a glimpse into the human potential. So people that can make any picture, recreate anything with a drawing, like it's a camera. They can fly over a city and redraw it for 6 hours, window accuracy down to the right window of the building. these are all possibilities of things that we can do with our brain. And I think now is like a lot of kids, there's autistic kids now, they're doing telepathy with their parents, where the parents can see what the answer is and the kid can channel the energy from the parents to understand what the parents are feeling, because we just don't know. Like, and we're like sort of experimented on in a way. Like, we've got lots of these medicines that are new, and sure, they fix this, but we don't know what happens if you eat, you know, a sausage with the medicine, you might grow a tail. But we, you know, we know that it fixes your common cold. So there's so much happening. We don't really know the residual effects yet, because we've grown and accelerated so much as a species. We haven't had a chance to see, well, what's the downstream effects? Great example is asbestos. It was a breakthrough. It was the best thing ever. We loved it. Oh my God, asbestos. Oh my God, it's the best thing ever. Water out of a tap. Holy fuck. Everyone dead. Okay, well, that, whoops, you know, we thought we were good, but we got humbled pretty quickly. You know, it's like, and then COVID, it's like everyone wear a mask. And then sure enough, you know, next thing is, there's 6 billion masks in the ocean now and Greenpeace is unhappy. Like, every solution today is likely tomorrow's problem. And, you know, that's like, we saw that now, microplastics, right? Every Tupperware container, oh my God, plastic. This is amazing. Oh my God. Actually, everyone's nuts now have plastic in them because there was these small things. And it's always these things like, oh, nah, it couldn't be that bad. Like, oh, it's not that bad. Oh, well, yeah, it's, like, it's not ideal, but it's not that bad. It's like, no, humans are aggressively consuming everything. So if you make something that's sort of bad, it will, you know, it will be extrapolated to the worst case scenario. And so, like, with fast food, perfect example, all this mercury in, like, fish, mercury in the vaccines, all that kind of stuff, not conspiracy theories. I'm just saying the shit stuff has caught up to us, right? So now you got, like, the number one preventable cause of death, I think, is overtaken by smoking in America, or it has overtaken smoking, is heart disease or diabetes or something like that, like one of the food-related things. Oh, look, you know, Macca's isn't designed or whatever, the Pizza Hut or whoever it is, they switch to these, you know, ingredients that are just, our body doesn't know how to process, and we're feeling the wrath of that. And so what we knew yesterday is now not accurate. We know asbestos is the solution we've been looking for. We know that fast food is this new innovative way to eat food on the go, blah, blah, blah. No, we've learned the hard way. Social media, we know it's a good way to get information. No, it's a wasteland now. Like, do you know what I mean? So everything, so think about all the things we know today and what we will probably know tomorrow. And, you know, it's sort of like today's solutions, tomorrow's problem. We just can't see the problem yet, you know? Wild. Cool. But I think this is all, the optimism I have is that this will all come to a head and be heavily researched, because just like people will need alternatives. And when there is alternatives, people will take a chance and pursue them. Just like people took a chance on Bitcoin as an alternative monetary system. They saw something in it. They didn't know it was going to work. They weren't sure, but they still just took a chance. They said, you know what? This is something I want to be part of. And I think you're going to see the same thing when companies are getting cut off the energy conversation. It will force that diamond under pressure moment, which will force them to basically go, how do we compete in this energy race? And innovative things are going to come to play much more, much faster than if that conversation's not happening. And by the way, renewable energy, like, it's not renewable, like, at all. Like, there's a reason why they don't call it regenerative energy, because it's not regenerative. Like, renewable energy is where I go and I dig up cobalt to make lithium, to put in lithium ion batteries. So we have a limited amount of cobalt, but remember, it's renewable. No, it's not. There's a finite source of that shit. So yeah, you can recharge your battery. Doesn't mean it's renewable. That's like saying just because I can refill my water bottle, I've got an everlasting water bottle. Like, no, I've still got to fill it up with water. In the same way, I've still got to charge my battery. Anyway, that's just another thing, but I don't think the future of energy doesn't look like solar panels and wind farms. That's capitalism energy, because someone's selling the batteries, you know? And so if I'm the guy selling the batteries, I'm going to definitely be pushing, hey guys, you need to get these. They're really good. I don't blame them. It's a capitalist environment. Like, if you can sell it to someone, that's your good luck to you. But I just don't think that's the end state. I think the end state, I don't even think the end state's nuclear. I think nuclear, once we get there, that becomes, then the next one is the breakthrough. Because, like, the next one is where we go.
You think it's just one away?
it's one away, but we've got to accept nuclear first, because nuclear, just like accepting the internet, will open more conversations about energy, and the way that we appreciate energy will change a lot, the way that we work with energy. And if we can expend a lot of energy at a low cost in, you know, allocate, if everyone's running on nuclear, then everyone's not as paranoid about energy. So we can do more experiments. We can try more things. Yeah, I just think, I don't know. And I definitely think a lot of this is probably already found, like, as in, I don't think it's lost through history. I think it's just sort of, not deployed through history. And I don't blame him. If I'm a capitalist, like if I'm Henry Ford, or if I'm, you know, whoever, if there's a free energy conversation, but I'm the CEO of the petrol company or the oil company, yeah, I'd probably make a pact with everyone to keep it on the hush hush, you know? And I think some of the work that Tesla did when it comes, like, you know, just manipulating using electromagnetism and shit like that to basically bend it to his will, like, it didn't disappear. And Tesla wasn't wrong. Like, it's not like he was like, oh, debunked. Like, it wasn't like some historical, like, oh, what an idiot. No, the dude's just been muted for the whole of history. And I think his work is so strong that it's going to come back just 1 trillion-fold. Because a lot of people feel like he's a guy that sort of didn't get his moment in history. Like, he's got this baller level of, you know, credibility, but he's not everywhere. Like, it's just something about it where he's sort of like lost to the wayside of history in a way. Like, he's not Einstein. Like, he doesn't have the same level of Einsteinness, I don't think, in terms of accolades and the way that we celebrate him. But I really think he's like this quiet soul through history that has got the loudest brain, basically. Like, he's got to be up there with the best that ever did it, I think. And so I think a lot of his work, like, literally didn't disappear. Like, he died, but his work's still proven to be accurate. And I think it's just about, it's only a matter of time until everyone knows that. And I think, like, as well, at the moment, there's lots of people that are tinkering with this. Like, there's a lot of cats online. Like, you watch their, I bought some of their products even. I don't even know if I still got it. But it's like dodecahedron shaped coils that are attracting energy and, like, basically amplifying energy. And it's like, it's just, there's so much out there, but we haven't had the conversation yet as a team, like as a not as a country, as a species. We're still on the idea that there is one optimal way to make it work, make energy work or whatever. But yeah, I think we're ready for the conversation. And if we're not, the conversation's coming, because AI needs energy and Bitcoin needs energy. And humans need AI because it's going to make convenience for economies, and governments need energy for Bitcoin because that's going to pay off their debts and solve all their problems. So the two best people will be onto it, I think, like as in the two people with the most resources will be onto it. But yeah, it just feels like it's the time is now. We're on the dawn of it. Information feels like it's finished, and we sort of, our whole journey in information is now represented by basically a large language model. Everything from art production, music recognition, audio, sound, everything all synthesized down to just a Q&A box. And now we'll see energy take the same path. Wait, you mean you used to dig up the earth to get energy? Yeah, a big, heavy machine and all this stuff. And, oh, my God, how did you guys even live? Like, you know, me talking to my grandma, what do you mean you didn't have a TV? Oh, my God, what did you do in the afternoon? Oh, you know, like, and they've got their answers, but their consciousness never had the baseline for it. You know, kids now, they've got a baseline of iPads and TVs and shit. So the idea of sitting in a room with nothing in it and just a candle burning and, like, reading a paper, they'd be like, what the hell is this shitty version of life? You know? So anyway, good things to come, dude. Good things to come.
Yeah, bro, man. So many things I want to pull on.
Good things to come. Oh, okay.
I've heard of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
What do you think? So in case there are any, like, physics minds out there listening to this who want to understand, like, I might be maybe too optimistic. You seem to have, like, a clear idea of, like, the steps. You think nuclear next, and then we hit the free energy. I'm really hoping that we can just skip that and just go straight to free energy, because there is so much decentralization of information out there and a lot of sharp people sort of hiding in the abyss that, you know, could just come out and just figure this thing out. And so I don't know if, like, what your thoughts are on, like, the work of Stephen Greer, Dr. Stephen Greer. He's, you know, he's kind of always saying that there are a bunch of people out there that have figured this out already.
Yeah.
And it's just a problem of they keep getting whacked because they would, like, that's such a huge destroyer.
Like MH370, massive, right? That was one of the things. Yeah. Like the airline and the plane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you've got these plasmoid conversations and stuff. So, like, the Stephen Greers of the world and all that stuff, they're always operating on proprietary information and they can never share it. And so, like, it definitely piques my interest, but I can't listen to it because I know there's no meat anywhere. And it's like, it's exciting and it really, it gets the optimism of, oh, there is something worth pursuing. Like, as in, you could find something, it's out there. Like, there's an answer out there, basically. Like, because he's saying, you know, he knows his answers. But sort of like Africa skipped dial-up internet, right? So the internet started, we went through dial-up and all that shit. Africa went straight to Wi-Fi, for lack of a better term. In the same way, I think there could be countries that will skip nuclear and just go straight to basically abundant energy. And I don't know whether that will look like a corporation, whether it looks like an individual in their home, or it looks like a nation state doing it. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if that's like that's a path forward for sure. Like, you know, this idea that someone breaks the mold, and it might be a, you know, 10 people that live in a hut in Africa or something. And that'd be sick. Like, that'd be awesome. But I know that now we've got, there's just much more of a presence and respect for energy and trying to actually learn about it because the carrot is finally there. People have got enough of a give a shit. And a lot of people have a give a shit because everyone can, here's the thing. If you're born on Earth now, this is the cool thing about Bitcoin. You get born on Earth, oh, you got to learn how to do this. No, learn about energy. If you know about energy better than everyone else, you get the most Bitcoins because I can mine Bitcoins cheaper than you because of my understanding of energy, because I can maximize it or whatever I can do to make, get an edge over you. That's the whole world. Oh, I didn't learn about everything. I just study LLMs and ask it questions. And that's what I learn about things that I'm interested in. But yeah, I solved my income problem ages ago. I've got my BitAx miner that's mining or whatever it is, but I've got free energy because I pieced it together. And these optimizations that individuals are going to make, because even the individuals now have the motivation to figure out, well, how can I mine coins for free? Because then I can just set and forget it, you know, even if it's 10 BitAx miners or one BitAx miner or nothing. Like, you know, people can, if you've got an edge, you will want to take advantage of it. And now we've got a global canvas for everybody to try and be the best energy expert out there. Because the more energy efficient you are, the more Bitcoins you will get. And yeah, so I just think that like the marathon, like the gun fired, the starting pistol's fired, you know, like as in it's all about to come and start happening. So I don't know what the solution will look like, but I would be very surprised if it all did not look like work of Nikola Tesla and the related stuff. I don't think it's going to be some wild quantum mechanics BS. Like, and I say quantum mechanics BS, like, I just mean it's just so noisy. Like, and that's like the whole essence of it, which is like, oh, if it's unpredictable, then yeah, that's quantum mechanics. It's like saying, going into a classroom and saying, oh, can no kid ever get the right answer? Yeah, that's perfect. It's like, what the fuck kind of framework for anything is that? Oh, it's the ambiguity. Yeah, you don't know the answer. Sure, you don't know the state of the particle. Sure. I don't think that's the framework for the universe because every single particle has drawn a path previously. So there is no ambiguity. Like this quantum, the uncertainty principle and stuff, that things can be in multiple states. That's like literally looking at a pixel on a screen and saying it's an uncertainty principle because it can be in multiple states. Either going to be yellow, it could be whatever, you know, it can make up a, be part of a headphone, saxophone, pillow, whatever this pixel is part of. It's sort of like just the wrong lens, in my opinion. That's why I feel like they've been spinning their wheels for 70 years on it, or I don't know, 60 years, whatever they want to call it. Oh, we've had big breakthroughs, blah, 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 blah. No, you haven't. We've had more technology in the past 50 years than ever before, and you're still spinning your wheels on it. Like, at some point, you got to go, we might be wrong. We still have 6 of the 7 unsolved maths problems from the Clay Mathematics Institute. There's 6, 7 problems, all called, they're called the Millennium Prize problems. There's $1 million bounty for the solution to each of them. Literally, cash in hand, man. One dude solved one of them, said no to the money. These 6 problems have remained unsolved forever. yet we have increased our processing power and technology by like 100 million fold. At some point you have to go, maybe you're looking at it from the wrong perspective, dude. Like, I get it. There's sunken cost to it. Yeah, we've given out Nobel Prizes for this shit. Yeah, all this. I get it. I understand it. But eventually, you'd rather be wrong and find the right answer than just stay wrong but feel like you're right. I think, anyway. And so that's why I feel like quantum mechanics will take a bit of a fizzle and classical mechanics will come back because it's more predictable. I think machines would operate on a classical mechanical model much more effectively because they can. It's very easy to say a machine is deterministic because we can see the circuitry board that the light particle will travel, the electrical current will travel from there to there to there to there to there. And we know that all the operations when it hits each gate through the circuit board or whatever. Our brain's the same thing. It's a highway of little like things. And so like if I bump my head or something, I feel dizzy because the circuit board is like shit's going a different channel. It's taking different streets to get to the beach. It's like when you're driving on Google Maps, there's like lots of different ways you could go. That's the same thing as your mental state. The mental state or the environment will dictate which paths your brain takes. And we call that feelings. Now, they're not really feelings because if you ask any brain surgeon whether we've got free will or not, they'll probably say no because they're like, well, I know that every time you think of a hammer, that area lights up, that area lights up, and there's a path, direct highway between the two. So if you're thinking of a hammer now, I could probably tell you you're thinking of a hammer because you're just observing what's actually happening. You know, we're actually, oh shit, okay, so yeah, it's hard to describe my feelings and stuff, but it's like, well, it's not hard to describe them electrically. So if I'm electrically viewing you through an electrical field or whatever, when you're happy, you're going to feel happy and you're going to release different pheromones and all this stuff. It's like if you're sad, dogs know you like really well. They can tell when you're upset. They can tell when you're happy and they match your energy and stuff because a dog's nose is like their eyes. So that's like they use that to see their environment. So if you're unhappy, when we're sad or emotional, you know, our pores will open up a tiny bit. We don't see it, but it's like we're releasing something that we can't even smell or notice. But the dog's like, oh man, your day was that shit? Fuck, bro, I'm sorry. And they come over and like just sit next to you. And we're just like, no, nothing's wrong. And it's like, oh yeah, nothing's wrong. Dude, and we're sitting there like oozing wrongness, like bleh, like spewing out. And that's another thing. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's there. Like we can see 16 million or 16 billion colors. Like there's 60 septrillion of them, which means if something's made out of colors that I can't see, I can never see it. So what are the odds that there's other stuff? Like it's pretty high, right? You know, the spectrum I can see is just a slither of reality. And so to try and shape a model of reality on the slither I can see feels like a dead end to start with. You know, it's like saying, let's analyze the Bitcoin network by looking at all these transactions in this block. It's like, no, you need to run a node. Then you can see the whole library of everything. But yes, you will make decisions based on this block that might change the next time. Like, you know, you might not get any consistency in that. And you might not be getting the whole picture to make a whole picture judgment if you're not viewing the whole picture in the first place. I don't know. I feel like I've chewed your ear off, mate.
I love it, dude. I love it. Sometimes we have those episodes, like just a constant ranting episode is always on the table.
Sorry to the listeners for all the ranting, but no, it's good stuff. It's great. It's exciting times and we've got lots to be fortunate for, I think. Definitely. If you're listening to this, it means you've heard about Bitcoin probably and you have a lot to be lucky. Like that's... Mm-hmm. Phew, you're here, you know, like welcome, because there's a lot of people that still aren't here. Man, it's like getting to a party and being like, fuck, this party's awesome. And then telling your friends to come, they're like,
yeah,
you know, you're like, dude, trust me, it's mad. You'll have a great time if you come. Yeah. So anyway.
Absolutely, dude. And there's so many exciting times ahead because of Bitcoin, as you talked about, and it's impossible to contain the excitement. That's why I like to be a platform and just let people go off, because sometimes you gotta go off.
100%, man. And you know what? Yeah. People don't have Like, there's a lot of bad things over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. People have lost families. People have, you know, the businesses have gone down because of COVID. People have gotten sick, whatever it is. But people need a win. Like, as a species, we need a win. And it sort of feels like Bitcoin's the win for everyone. You know, if you get on board, it'll be your best friend. If you treat it well and you follow its instructions and you follow its protocol, it'll be good to you over time. That's my gamble anyway. I'm hoping on it.
Yeah. Bitcoin is definitely a win that we need as a species right now.
100%, dude. 100%. And you know what the cool part is? You, me, every person listening to this, every person watching, you know, doing anything Bitcoin, they're all contributing. It's all many hands make light work. Everyone's putting a little brick into the pyramid, whatever they're doing. Some people are helping the people move the bricks to the pyramid. Some people are whipping people on the back to move the bricks faster, whatever it is. But we're all helping. Helping. Yeah. You know, cracking the whip. But no, it's good. It's good. It's an exciting time. It's an exciting time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Turning into a, I feel like enlightenment and like is a term and it really feels like it's like a thing for enlightenment because it just shuts so much bullshit out. It's like, no, dude, it's all noise. And the way you measure that is like, look at your Bitcoin wallet versus your bank account and look at your spending habits with Bitcoin versus, you know, your fiat money. And it's like, yeah, you don't want to smash spending it. Like, you're like, I want to spend it on things. Like, I like buying things. Personally, I like buying things with Bitcoin if they are within the community kind of thing. So my BitAx miner, buy that with Bitcoin. Like 3D printed Satoshi thing, you buy that. I got a Node Runner, you know, little coin that was a commemorative one, buy that with Bitcoin. But yeah, I'm not rushing to buy the new makeup or the new iPhone and shit like that because I'm like, that's not worth more than my Bitcoin, like today or tomorrow or the next day. And so you start, well, the term is you become the frugalest motherfucker in the world because nothing's worth spending Bitcoin for. Like when you start going to Bitcoin, like hell no. You know, I've got a funny story. I went on a surf trip with my brother in 2015 and I didn't have any money. And so I was like, oh, I've got these Bitcoins. I'll pay with them, blah, blah, blah. And I paid... it was like 7.5 Bitcoins for the surf trip. Dude. Yeah. Yep. So that was like $1 million surf trip now in Aussie dollars. Yeah. But you know what? I still wouldn't change it. But that's the only things, like real root core memories for life. Those are the things that you kind of want to spend. It's either contributing to the community or spend it on things that really matter. And that might be putting a roof over your family's head, going on a surf trip that you'd always dreamed of going on, whatever it is, you know, but make it special, make it count because your money and your time is very precious and you're special and you know, we're here for 60, 80 years and we work a lot of it. We shouldn't part way with our time or money so, you know, so flippantly or whatever the term is. Like we should really help reorientate. No, I worked really hard. I had a really hard day. I don't want to trade that for, you know, a premium Netflix subscription this month. No, I'm not doing that. Like, it's not adding enough value. And because Bitcoin adds so much value to your life, everything else looks like a deadbeat compared to it. Like, I always say this, it's like a Medusa asset where once you see Bitcoin, everything else looks like just turns to stone. It's like junk, shitcoin. Dude, I'm even saying to myself, property's a shitcoin now. It's like, I need somewhere to live. Like, I have to have a roof over my head. And I'm like, yeah, it's a shitcoin. It's like, dude, it's fucked. It's actually like a disease almost. Right? Yeah. But it's fucking Bitcoin, the hypnotizing cunt. Yeah, so anyway.
Because it just changes your denominator for how you value things. And like you said, that's important to understand that it's important life experiences and, you know, things that make your life and your relationships better, like a good house and a good vacation. And, you know, buying your girlfriend or wife some really nice flowers and, you know, a good ring and things that makes her feel happy. Like, these are all things that matter. And you should never let the money – and we started with this, I think, unless I'm – I think we talked about this earlier how, like, it's just numbers. You know, we're too – we're too obsessed with the money itself. Bitcoin should remove us from being obsessed with the numbers on the screen, not get us more sucked into it. And I think a lot of us right now, the reason why – And I do my best to keep this third person view of, you know, yes, I'm, you know, definitely connected to the price right now because I know it's going to rise a lot. So we are thinking about the price, but in the future, who knows when that is, but I'm 100% excited to use that money and make my life better, as it's that's what money's supposed to do. You know,
it's literally exactly. And we've kind of gotten into this idea where it's not about money isn't to make your life better. It's to make you feel better. You know, and that's sort of a big sort of separation where I think Bitcoin brings it back to money can make your life better and not the money, I'll buy that to feel better. You know, oh, if you get the new jacket, then people will think you're cool. Or, you know, oh, you got the new lipstick. Oh, that you're popular now at school or whatever it is, right? It's like all these things. It's, we're spending money to make us feel better, but not money. Like with Bitcoin, we'll make our lives better the way we spend money. Like, you know, actually invest it because Bitcoin is the denominator now. It's like it's so root layered. You only want to spend it on real long-term shit. And then you start thinking, well, what is real long-term shit? And you go, fuck me. Nothing I do has any long-term shit in it. It's all ephemeral junk. You know, like I'm onto iPhone number 3 in the 2020s or whatever. Like it's not the same thing. It's like, it is like, well, how do I get a home for my family? Or how do I get an education for my kids? Or whatever it is, I don't know. But real like life wins, you know, like that's what you should be spending your money on, like the things that help you set up for life and make your life easier and stuff. And so the good thing about Bitcoin as well is like it's got this, it just changes your time horizon, you know. It's like farmers can't control the weather. Bitcoin, you can't control the bull markets. You've got a compass on when they're going to be there, just like farmers know whether it's summer or winter. In the same way, it's Bitcoin. Is it a bear market or a bull market? You know, post-halving typically is when the sun comes out. And so, yeah, right now everyone's harvesting their crops, getting excited, you know, holy shit, this is going to be a massive season for us. You know, it's going really well. But then the bear market comes, but then you've harvested your crops and you focus on different things. Okay, you're looking at, well, what is important for me? What's important for my stack? How do I optimize my stack? All these kind of things. And you go back to the drawing board. And each time it's kind of like pulling into the pit lane in a race and getting, you know, a buff, like getting a buff up, like you're getting new tires put on. You're getting, because you've got new knowledge from the previous experience. So yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's just so exciting, man. It's so exciting. So exciting. And I hope people are excited and hope people are just, you know, giving themselves enough bandwidth to let it breathe for a sec. You know, don't let it, you don't, if you don't get it in 3 months or 6 months, don't worry about it. No one has ever. Some people say, oh, I read the white paper, and I was like, I'm like, congrats. I read the white paper, sort of, and then I looked at it for ages and didn't really get what the fuck was going on. And I had a full-on different interpretation of it. Congrats, you got it first go. I'm a retard and it took me ages. Like, and you're probably, most people listening are probably retarded too. Gonna take
I still
ages,
don't. If you get it, I could norm. Not explain it. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, you are very, I don't get it. And I feel stupid asking a question. No. You don't get it. We never got it either. We've all just had to figure it out as we're going. Hey, and so ask away. You know, there's no stupid questions. And I think that's it's actually one of the best things about the Bitcoin community. Like people say, oh, they're toxic and shit. Well, they're toxic to the principles. Like, yeah, stop talking about forking and stop talking about all this bullshit. But if you've got a question, there's no way they wouldn't be like, oh, dude, 100%. What's a good hardware wallet? What one should I try? They've got great insights and really happy to help and give guidance and, you know, move people in the right direction. Because we're all shepherds trying to usher people along, you know, like help people find their seat in the movie theater, whatever you want to call it. Like whether, you know, the guides, which tickets, where are your tickets, you know, getting people into the stadium because Bitcoin's about to go on stage. So we go, everyone, grab a seat. And that's sort of, you know, or a life raft to the Titanic, whatever analogy you want to use, but it's very, feels like that. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more, man. It's, a lot of craziness out there. It's
a lot of craziness out there. We're here for it. We're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it's a time to be alive. That's for sure.
100%.
The energy side is, I'm going to continue focusing more and more on that because I think that is a really fascinating one. Do you have any recommendations for like research I could do, books, podcasts, movies, just like researching the free energy rabbit hole so I could find some more people to talk to about that?
Yes, I will send you the link. I've got them bookmarked. I'll find them and send them to you after this. But one is on Vortex Mathematics, and I think that's probably the most interesting thing that I've seen, because it treats numbers, and there's a lot of the stuff that I've been focusing on is, well, what if numbers are particles? And so what if the most elementary particle in the universe, it's not a quark or an atom or electron, it's numbers, because numbers are the record of measurement for any particle. So they must, like, the idea is that they can carry influence over the physical reality. So the non-physical stuff, you know, is the influencer of the physical reality. But yeah, I'll send you some links after this. And sorry, I'm not off the top of my head, but Vortex Mathematics, Marco Roden, there's a really good video I'll send you on that one. And then a couple of others. But I sort of landed on prime numbers being kind of the key ingredient for everything, because prime numbers emerge as, like, every identity in the universe declares their identity. And now what I mean by that is, like, you know, no, every identity has their identity assigned, meaning you don't tell me that you're you. I tell you you're you by verifying that you're you, right? Is that Ben? Is that actually Ben? Oh, yeah, no, it looks like him. He's not using an AI. Yeah, that's him. That's how we do identity verification. But with numbers, numbers are the only pure identities where they declare their identity. No, I'm number seven. I am number seven. There's nothing else. And you can call me seven. You can call me whatever. But they are the ones with a true individuality, like with absolutes, like out of the box. And so I think prime numbers, that's why we use prime numbers for everything. Prime numbers are the roots for all cryptography. So for us, we're already depending on them wildly. And I think that number theory will have a huge breakthrough as well. So the idea of numbers being more than just these arbitrary things that we have, they all carry meaning, you know? And so I think, yeah, I think numbers and vortex mathematics, or not vortex mathematics specifically, but numbers and prime numbers are going to be part of the free energy conversation. Absolutely, 100%. Because I think they're the clue to how things behave at the smaller scale. And so if we can find how things operate at the smaller scale, the behavior patterns, then we'll be able to extrapolate that up into different layers, whether it's the layers of electrons or atoms or, you know, actual physical shit that I'm holding, whatever this is, you know, shit like that. So, yeah, definitely researching Tesla and 369 and vortex mathematics, I think, is unbelievable, and prime numbers, and the intersection between those two. And so I'll send you some links after this, though. But it's rad.
I wasn't expecting numbers. I'm thinking more like Tesla side stuff. The numbers side, I'm looking forward to digging in.
That's been my whole shtick for a while, is like everything must be the most influential thing on energy is numbers, basically. And not, like, that's how I was thinking of what is time. And it's like time is the influencer of mass and energy. And that's what time is. It's the thing that changes, you know, what a particle is today versus tomorrow. The only difference is time. You know, it's still the same identity, but that identity has evolved over time. And so that's like people say, well, what if aliens land on Earth? Who are they? I'm like, I actually think it'll be us from the future coming back, most likely. So it's the same identity, just evolved. And so I think that's why identity becomes a really big part of the conversation, because to predict energy's behavior, you have to be able to partition it down so finely that each one can be an identity. So like, let's say you've got a ball of pixels, I can chop every pixel up and label them all with a unique label to see what pixels did what over time. Yeah, more for another convo. I'm back whenever you need me.
Oh, we're definitely going to have another one, dude. I feel like,
yeah, dude.
I didn't even nick my notes here, so we've got lots more. I think once I go through a bit more learning on that energy stuff, I think that we might have more to dig into. The whole Tesla conversation, like, what did he do? What's his story? Yep. That's what I'd like to get into next. So we'll bookmark it, man.
Yeah, we can definitely hit it for sure, man. Dude, like, the paint's falling off the walls here. My parents don't answer my phone calls anymore. Everyone's sick of me yapping about this shit. So if I got one more person to talk to, hey, that's good.
Yes, dude. I love it. Mad. Man, where can people go follow you and just continue learning more about your work and what you're doing?
On GitHub, it's MikeD123, and I put a lot of the stuff that I talk about with energy and stuff like that on there. And the second one is Michael Dunwert 1 on Twitter. It's so annoying. It's basically my name without the H in it.
Just replace the H with a number. Hey, you do love numbers. You talked about numbers. So.
Yeah. It's a thing. I'm all about them. Oh, man.
Are you on Noster yet, dude? Are you on Noster? Are you on Noster yet?
Yeah, 100%. Dude, okay. By the way, Noster's really good. I've like only
amazing,
realized.
Right?
But Twitter is just, it's a fucking wasteland. It's just exhausting. Like, we've got AI algorithms. If I've seen the same thing 8 days in a row, fuck it off. Like, bro, like, it's not hard. What if this, then that? Like, someone write a fucking rule. Then I was like, oh, people are like, no, you got to curate your feed. And I'm like, what the fuck's the algorithm doing then? Jack shit. It's like, oh, I'll curate my feed. So on TikTok, you can go not interested. And it goes, great. And that's a big, like, thumbs down to the algorithm. And it's TikTok algorithm is next level smart. On Twitter, you're like, oh, I go to like, oh, I'm not interested in this. It's like, mute, block, unfollow. I'm like, I'm just trying to tell you that this content is unrelated to my existence and I don't want to see it anymore. It's like, but you can mute them, you can block. I'm like,
it's so convoluted, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, but anyway, I found Noster just insanely refreshing, like really refreshing. It was like, I need to use it more. I used to have Damus, but now I've got Primal. But yeah, so anyway, I think Noster's fantastic. Noster's a whole other conversation. Like, that's like a decentralized diary for humanity in a way, like everyone writing their thoughts on a different page.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's incredible. And I think
the big thing I like about it is like when you're exploring some new interesting rabbit hole or something that you, you know, just isn't super relevant to your audience, but people still want to, you know, hear about it and learn about it potentially because they're following you. You can just throw it up there, just chuck it out. Because on Twitter, you get punished by the algorithm for going away from the trending topics that get a bunch of likes and retweets.
Dude,
I
never get, like, the only shit I repost is, like, just different things that look nice in maths or, like, you know, stuff about prime numbers or funny shit about stuff. And it's like, I'm so out of the algo. Like, I'm just not in the, like, the social consciousness at all.
Yeah.
But I went through a thing because I was like, I was just going through something at the time and I was just like, you know what? I want different content. And so I just went through all of my favorite video games, followed a bunch, watched a bunch of hashtags, went through, clicked like on stuff and did the same for like math stuff that I found really nice to try and get my algo more of that. Anyway, it's probably time for a refresh on that. I should be doing that again because it's gone back to retard town. So I need to fix that. Yeah. But anyway, man, dude. I really appreciate you having the conversation, having a chat. This is awesome, dude. Around anytime you want to do it again. We're going to have a sick year. 2025 is going to be awesome. And there's lots to look forward to and lots to be optimistic about. So it's rad.
Agreed, man. Agreed. Love it, dude. I just found you on Noster, and we need to get you boosted on there, dude. That last message 2 weeks ago. Let's go, man.
This is the thing. I want to see some.
If you start just talking about and just sharing those, like you said, you're going to send me those resources about free energy, just start throwing them up on there, hashtag free energy, and I'll boost it so we can get more people talking about this and know that you're the man to go to.
I feel like that's where I actually put more of these things is actually on Noster. Anyway, I'll check it out.
Earn Zaps for it. You can earn Bitcoin for sharing interesting things that people have never seen before. That's why it's so awesome. Dude. So awesome.
Kane. All right, man. Yes. Well, I'll see you on Noster.
Yeah, dude, I'll see you over there. It was great chatting, and we'll definitely be in touch again in the future. I'm looking forward to another one.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much, Ben. I appreciate it.